Welcome to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. My name is Gary Quashen. It's good to be here today. Hope everybody's having a terrific day. It sure is beautiful out there. It's nice to get rid of some of that rain, I'll tell you. So in the last, I say, few weeks, we've been doing some, well, we always do some pretty dramatic shows here because of what's going on when it comes to fentanyl and fentanyl poisoning and addiction in general. But today I wanted to kind of change it up a little bit. I mean, you guys obviously got a dramatic story, and but I believe it's also about experience, strength, and hope. And today we're going to do a little bit of your experience, a little bit of your strength, and a lot of your hope. How's that, guys?
Sounds good.
That sounds good.
You know, and what made me think of this, I was at home yesterday. And I did a TV intervention about 10 years ago on, y'all watched The Doctors, right?
Yeah.
I did an intervention on The Doctors of a 13-year-old girl, actually 12 at that time, that was insulin dependent. And we brought her into the adolescent rehab that we had. And her name was Miranda. And I've been following her ever since that, and it's over 10 years actually, and she's been calling me the last month, and she's been shooting fentanyl again, and it's just been getting worse and worse, and calling me from hospitals and different hospitals and trying to get into rehabs, but she was too medically compromised to go to any hospital. She has comes from a foster home, and her mom might be listening. Her name is Linda. And what a great woman. I mean, she did everything she could to save this kid, plus, 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 plus. And I got a text message. I got a call from Miranda about a week ago just saying hi and then what's going on. She was in a mental or behavioral health unit, and she was scared and didn't know what to do and didn't call me the next day. But I got a Facebook message from Linda, that, and all it said was, please call me, Miranda died. In her 20s, and it just kind of hit me in the gut. And I deal with this, as you guys know, every day. Mm-hmm. But I known her since she was 12 and watched her do this. And what had happened is, I guess she found a guy, and they found her using in the house. They asked her to leave, and they found her in the lobby, whatever it is called. But anyway, she was dead. And I'm so freaking tired of dying people. And this is just for anybody that's listening to this show. Listen, nobody's smarter than the drugs today. Nobody's going to outsmart the drugs today. If you're using any kind of drug, experiment. If you're experimenting with them, if you think you're doing it recreationally, it's going to kill you, I promise. And I keep saying that to people, and they keep freaking dying. Mm-hmm. You know, I keep saying the same thing over and over again. You're not smarter than the drug. You can't outsmart something you can't see. And then they go and they try it and they freaking die. So, I mean, this is just to anybody out there. You're not smart enough to beat this because nobody is. You can't see it. You don't know where it is. You don't know which pill it's going to be. You don't know what hit it's going to be. You don't know what shot it's going to be. You don't know what batch it's going to be. Yeah. If they put too much fentanyl in there, you won't know. And you'll die. Now, just to throw this in, I know of another program that lost somebody, and they had Narcan this person 7 times. And it didn't work. And the reason probably why it didn't work, because there's a new drug out there called xylazine, or they call it Trank. And it's they found it in 48 states, including California. 48 states. That means it's everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. And it's an animal tranquilizer. It's actually made for farm animals, horses, cattle, and that kind of stuff. And it enhances the high of fentanyl. So they're mixing it in. Well, it's going to be in everywhere. That's what everybody's big fear is. And it gets you to higher, and you stay higher longer, and your come down's not as strong. So people are starting to love it, but it's also have some flesh-eating stuff. It's decaying people's flesh, and it's immune. What's immune to it is Narcan. Narcan don't work if you have xylazine in the drug, as if we needed something else right now. We have a life-saving drug called Narcan. Now they're putting stuff in the drugs that Narcan won't work. So please, be careful and realize that anytime you take something today, if it's ecstasy, if it's Percocet, if it's Oxy, if it's crystal meth, if it's ecstasy, If it's cocaine, it's probably got fentanyl in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're gambling with your life every freaking time you do this. And I keep telling people that, and they keep freaking dying. And it's just, it's heartbreaking. It's saddening. It's terrible. We had a, you guys were at the vigil, weren't you?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Did you see what happened in that room when I asked how many people lost somebody to drugs?
Everyone should.
There was almost 300, well, I say over 300 people in that room, and almost everybody stood up.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
I mean, I didn't even know what to say, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning of it, some lady walked up to me, and she was with another lady that lost her kid that knew me, and she handed me a picture of her 59-year-old sister. And she said, my sister died last week in a hospital. And she says, Carrie, her skin was coming off her leg. Xylazine, that's what they call it, that. So, yo, I mean, man, be careful out there. That Miranda thing really breaks my heart. I mean, she was so freaking young. But we buried in the last year three or four very young people under 22. You know some of, a couple of them, didn't you?
Yeah, the people that died.
Yeah. Didn't freaking listen.
Yeah. I have experience with that xylazine.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, and one, so here's what we're going to do. We got Danny. You know, you guys introduce yourselves.
Yeah, my name is Danny.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you know what to say.
21.
Yeah?
And I've been sober for about over 50 days. So since February 6th.
So, you know, some of the hardest parts I got, guys, of bringing somebody in for treatment, especially if they're addicted to fentanyl, which is probably the most addictive drug in the world, is the fear of the first 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny, you go from there because I got so many phone calls from you. Let's hear your story. You were walking down the street one day and you looked up into the sky and a bong fell into your hands and said, smoke me. Is that what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I've been using since I was like 15 and then like just getting stuff, anything I could get my hands on. And then it wasn't until I graduated high school.
Now 15, you explain that. Because here, let me follow me if I'm right. You guys help me with this.
Yes, sir.
Okay? So when we're young, we have what I call contracts. Remember those? When I grow up, I want to be a...
Yep.
Yes.
Most people want to be like a veterinarian, right? A cop, a lawyer, a doctor, a boxer, a model, right?
Football player.
Something like that. And we also, and they change, but we also have another set of contracts. Remember these? When I grow up, I'll never
do drugs.
You all said that. Why?
Yeah.
What? So, but we do, right?
Yeah.
When I grow up, I'll never use drugs. I don't want to do that. And we mean it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But somewhere down the line, we break a contract. What's the first contract most people who use drugs break? Usually a vape.
Yeah, or that was my
cigarettes.
First.
It was cigars for me.
My first was nicotine and
so a vape. Think about this for a second. There's only two reasons. Parents, I hope you're listening to this. There's only two reasons why a child would use nicotine or pick up a cigarette. Number one, the cool kids over there at the school, they're all doing it. And they're watching. The guys are looking. They go, wow, look at those good girls over there. And they got cigarettes dangling out of their mouth. And everybody looks cool, right?
Yeah.
And we walk over there and we start hanging out. And somebody says, hey, Danny, you want a hit? Want a cigarette? And most kids say no. Because it's a contract they made when they were little. Mm-hmm. But they're there every day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they start getting desensitized. And one day they go, what the heck? It's only a cigarette or a vape. And they take their first hit. What'd they just do?
Break the contract. Break.
What?
They broke the contract.
They broke a contract they made when they were probably in kindergarten, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So how do they clean that up? It's only a cigarette. I'll never smoke weed. Right. And they mean it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Why are you laughing?
Because I smoke weed.
It's okay, right?
First
thing,
yeah.
It's like, duh.
Yeah.
So, but they're there every day.
Yeah.
And so everybody's starting to smoke or eat it or whatever they do these days. And eventually, you can't see the bad.
Right.
All you can see is everyone having fun, and it's, you could desensitize, and, hey, dude, it's only pot. God put it there. It's not even a drug, and we start believing that crap.
Justifying it.
Yeah, and we take our first hit. What'd we do? Broke another contract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we did something more than just break a contract, didn't we? We smoked something that made us what?
Happy, feel good.
Made us happy and feel good. Yeah, it forgets our troubles and that kind of stuff. Take the pain away. Exactly. And we even did something else. We just became really part of that group.
Yep.
And that's a hard group to get rid of.
Yes, it is.
Even when you get clean.
Yep.
That's like one of the hardest friend.
Parts. I know. So how do we clean that up? It's only pot, I'll never.
Drink.
And we mean it.
Mm-hmm.
But we go to a party and somebody's passing around the pot and there's some alcohol coming and we drink a little bit of tequila and then somebody says, take a hit, what is it? Oh, it's meth. Oh, no, I'll never use drugs. Smoke a little bit more weed, drink a little bit more booze, and what the hit, one hit. What the heck, one hit won't hurt.
Here, take these pills. They're gonna... mm-hmm.
And we take our first hit and what do? We just took something that made us feel different and better than anything we ever done before and we are screwed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what people chase the rest of their life. Yes?
Yep, that's absolutely right.
The other reason why people start experimenting with cigarettes, parents just, if you're listening, it's a learned behavior from home.
Yep, that's why I did it.
Mm-hmm.
What?
That's why I did it.
Exactly.
It was around me from age of six.
This is a challenge to all the parents that are listening to me. Be to your child what you want your kid to grow up and be.
Yeah.
Be the role model. Do the things you want your kid to do. Don't do the things that you don't want them to do. Do what I say and not what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You're a hypocrite and it doesn't work.
Right.
So be the role model you want your kid to grow up to be. So Danny, 15, go from there.
15, and then just using whatever I can.
What happened? Can you remember the first time?
No.
I've been clean 42 years. I cannot remember.
Yeah.
So you started what?
Weed? Yeah, I started with weed. No, I started with drinking.
Okay.
And then from drinking, it just made me feel like more comfortable in my own skin. And like, first of all, I'm here because like it's helping me keep like stay sober.
Okay.
And like, so that's why just even saying like what happened is just making me realize everything, like in the way, and the reason I'm here today.
Mm-hmm.
So 15, just like with alcohol and then weed, and then I started experimenting with other drugs like psychedelics.
Right.
And then once I got a surgery after high school, and then I found out about painkillers.
Right.
Like Oxy and Percocet and all that.
And if you have an addictive personality and you leave the hospital,
I was eating like candy once I got prescribed. And then once I couldn't get any more refills.
How old were you?
18.
Okay.
Once I couldn't get any more refills, I started buying them on the street. Then I gained such a high tolerance from buying it on the street that I would get like tons of them and just it wouldn't even like do anything to me anymore.
Right.
So I moved on to heavier things from that, like fentanyl.
How old are you?
21.
And you were looking for fentanyl?
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. Isn't that kind of scary, dude?
Yeah, it's like, once I realized that, like, I've gotten to that point, I just realized that everything in my life was hanging by a thread and my way wasn't working. Like, just trying to get sober, my way wasn't working. Everything I try to do, I try to detox on my own and, like, all that stuff, and it wouldn't work because I would end up using. So I had to, like, give it all up and realize that I had to do it someone else's way.
Okay. So you've been – this is your second or third time in rehab?
Fifth.
And you've been called me the whole time around, don't you?
Yeah.
And I always seem to – I always tell you the same thing, don't I? What's that? All or none.
Yeah. They have to
– But I know one thing. You sent me something the other day. Do you mind if I tell you what you said?
Yeah, go ahead.
You said life's intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Because I know when you left rehab, I kept you a long time. Way after you were done, I kept you.
Yeah.
Because you were scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest fear? What was your biggest – what's the hardest thing about all this?
Just realizing I have to face life without having to depend on something that I was using, you know? And, like, every problem I had in my life, the solution was always drugs, and I'm trying to learn how to live life without always coming back to that solution, which is drugs and alcohol.
I want to correct you. I don't believe you're trying.
Yeah.
I believe you're doing.
Yeah.
There's difference. How much time sober you got?
over 50 since February 6th.
Lean forward. Pick up your right hand. Put it behind your back. Pat yourself on the
head. Yep.
Because you deserve that credit, man. That's not trying. That's doing.
Yeah.
And all we can do is do this thing at one day at a time, and you're killing it right now, dude.
Thanks.
I mean, I hope you're proud of yourself.
Yeah. It's
didn't
hard.
Didn't you go boxing on Saturday?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're doing all kinds of stuff now.
Yeah. I'm trying to, like, get all the passions that I lost when that all the drugs took away so much passion that I had, and I'm trying to get all that back.
Yeah. The only thing against you, and I keep telling you, is your age, because what you got to figure out is you got this addictive personality and you can't use anything, and that's what keeps you screwed all the time, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to try to find something that you can still do.
Yeah.
If you don't use anything, it just gets better, I promise you.
Mm.
And if you continue to try to find something or a way around it or outsmart it, you'll lose.
Yeah. Not the hard way.
Yeah, but anything you want to say, I know. Tell them how hard it is to detox this drug, man.
Oh, yeah, no.
I mean, really. I mean, put it to words what it's like.
It was just, it literally feels like you're dying, but it feels like you're as close to dying, but not, like, fully, like, actually dying. It takes way too long to actually come off of the drug. It's, like, a slow and, like, just miserable, like, just, it just, it feels like it's never gonna go away. And once when I got to rehab, I didn't detox until the third day I was there.
Because if we gave you medication to detox you, you just get sicker.
Yep.
We have to, when you're using fentanyl, it's got to come out of your system a little first.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll put you in the worst withdrawals there is.
Yeah.
So people come in sometimes and they try to fool us. They say, yeah, we haven't used in 3 days, and they use the day before that, and they get Suboxone or something, and now they're really sick.
Yeah, and I've seen that. It looks terrible, and I was so scared of that. And I did not. I was doing whatever I can to just prolong the taking medicine because I didn't want to get any crazy symptoms. Yeah, and so I waited like 4 or 5 days, and then I got doctors telling me that it's time to take the right medicine to detox off this. And even then, the medicine even the medicine, it took a couple of days of taking it to even feel the effect of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, I feel like the fentanyl and all the drugs that I was doing, it was just so strong, and
I love you and care a lot about you, and you know that I've always been worried you're going to end up dead. Yeah. And I still am. If you go out there and use, you cannot survive this thing. I think you really believe that now.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't you come close a couple times?
Yeah, three times.
Was that what happened?
The one that comes to mind was I was at a party with just like a bunch of friends, kind of like just hanging out at one of our friends' house, and we're all in the backyard, and I was in the bathroom, and I used in the bathroom fentanyl, and then once I came out to it, everyone just being outside, drinking, doing whatever they're doing, listening to music. And then suddenly, like, I'm sitting where I'm sitting with my friends, and I can't see to my right. Everything's turning black, and I look to my left, and it's black, and I can only see in front of me, so I'm having this tunnel vision. And then next thing I know, I'm waking up, and I'm in the back seat of a car on top of people in the back seat. Like, they have me laid down on top of them. And they rushing me to the hospital saying that I wasn't responding and that I was, you know, making a lot of weird sounds and vomiting, just like with my head facing upwards. And it was just a nightmare.
So you came real close to dying, didn't you?
Yeah. And then they told me that they were trying to take me to the hospital, but I started like breaking down in tears and telling them, please don't take me to the hospital. I don't want anyone to find out. And all these things, but
you so much wanted to protect your parents from knowing this.
Yeah, a lot.
And they know it now.
Yeah.
And they've been supportive, yes.
Yeah.
So they're listening. You want to say anything to them?
Well, I'm going to tell them that I'm doing whatever it takes to stay sober, and I love them. I love my mom and my dad, if they're listening. And they probably are. And I feel like I let them down, but I'm trying to do my whatever I can in my power to make it up to them. And by doing what I'm doing and going to rehab every day, Monday through Friday, and just learning, really just it's all about being able to be taught all these things, because at one point I was being so defiant and not letting anyone run my show, and I just didn't allow it, but now I'm letting it, you know?
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
And I know they're proud of you. Let's take a break.
Tough.
This is your Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quashin. We're going on break. Welcome back to the Action Drug Rehab Hour here on KHTS AM 1220 and 98.1 FM. Wow, Danny, that's a heck of a story. But you have how many days clean and sober again?
51, yeah.
Really good job, man.
Thank you.
Jake.
Yes, sir.
You're on, sir. Let's hear your story, because I've known you for a long time, man.
Yes, you have. And you want me to start from the beginning?
I don't care.
I'm Jake. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I'm 36 years old.
When did I first meet you?
17 years old.
You might have should have listened, huh?
Yeah. Wouldn't be here today if I did.
Yeah, probably.
Well, you never know. So I started using when I was 12. Started with cigarettes and cigars for my stepdad, who did smoke. Then it was weed. Immediately followed that was weed. And when I did that, it was the best thing I thought in the world. And of course, I was influenced by older people. So I thought I was cool when I was doing it, just to be accepted, because I had a rough upbringing with my stepdad. So I would do that to kind of escape, and then after that, I started drinking alcohol. That felt even better, and then pills came, and I was about 15 or 16 when I started doing pills, and that took me down a bad road.
A lucky road, because you made it, 16 years?
Yeah.
Playing with that stuff.
Seriously.
But that was a different time than it is
yes,
today.
Yes, absolutely. There were real pills that were not cut with fentanyl. Mm-hmm. I was stealing from my dad his prescriptions. They were Klonopin, and then I found Xanax. And actually, when I was 17 years old, I was enrolled in ACTION, the outpatient program, and I ended up overdosing on 18 Klonopins. And my dad couldn't wake me up, couldn't get me up. I woke up in the hospital, and someone from ACTION took me to a meeting immediately after I woke up, I felt like. I was super grateful for that.
But. Yeah, I knew I asked them to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure that. You did. after I got all the, or after that time, I ended up going to high school, like a regular high school, for a couple months at a time, and then I got kicked out. So I got sent to adult school. When I got sent to adult school is kind of when everything started really spiraling out of control, because when you turn 18, you don't have to go to school. They don't tell your parents. You don't have to – nothing, no checking in or anything. So I decided not to go to school, and I found cocaine, and then I found meth. And cocaine was cool. You know, I didn't really like it, but then the second I hit meth, that was it for me.
For anybody who doesn't know, it's a shortcut to the pleasure zone of your brain.
Yeah.
You
oh, yeah.
hit it, you're high.
Yep.
That fast.
Yeah, that fast. And once I did that, it was on. I was off to
worst, races. I think it's probably the worst drug that's ever been invented.
I totally agree. And from 18 to, from 18 till, I would say today, I've been in 15 rehabs. This will be the last 15th rehab I've been in. And it was bad. It was really bad. I pretty much would. I was like a dumpster garbage. You know, I would use anything I can just to get high, just to get away, just to escape. But the weirdest thing is I never liked heroin, and I never liked fentanyl. I've seen I had 20 friends, about 20, 25 friends die in a year.
Are y'all listening to that?
From
Did y'all hear that? Say that again.
I've had about 20 to 25 friends overdose in 1 year.
You know anyone who died, Danny?
Yep.
You know anyone who died?
Yep.
This ain't no game, guys. You cannot win playing that game. Go ahead.
And so that scared me alone, just knowing that.
You know, when we were kids, and I've been sober 42 years, nobody died.
Really?
I mean, we had one person who overdosed, but the drugs today, no one's going to live.
No.
If you're playing with them, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Go on.
So that scared me, but I was never a heroin. I was always an upper guy. I mean, I liked pills, but I was like mixing them with meth. And
I hate to break it to you, but fentanyl's in a meth.
Yeah.
Now.
No, yeah.
I'm detoxing people off of fentanyl that are coming in for meth.
Yeah.
As you know.
I do know very well. So that scared me, but I still wasn't like using it or anything. But today, and that just went on. That was an endless cycle of just using and burning bridges and losing my kids. And
how many kids you got?
I have two kids. And
how old are they?
I have a 10-year-old boy and a 14-year-old daughter.
Time to be a dad.
Time to be a dad.
What?
Time to be a dad.
What did you say?
Time to be a dad.
What do you say?
Time to be a dad.
That's what I thought he said. Okay, just checking.
Yeah. So what got me here today, it's the craziest thing.
Time to be a what?
A dad.
Okay.
Father. Yeah. Husband.
There you go.
There you go. A son.
Yeah.
Even.
Yeah.
A brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I was using like I would normally use. I was in my bathroom, I bought some ecstasy and I bought meth. My smart, bright thinking thought I should put the MDMA with the meth in a shot and a needle and shoot it up. Why? I just, you know, I wanted to get as high as I can. I don't know why.
Sounds good, genius.
Sounds really good, right? I remember doing that shot and putting the cap back on the needle and waking up in the hospital immediately after that. That was it. My son found me in there. First, they knocked on the door. Apparently, they could hear me snoring. My daughter and my son, they were knocking on the door. They just heard me snoring. They didn't know what was wrong until they looked under the door and saw me, like, hunched over, you know. My daughter didn't want to see what happened when my son opened the door, so she backed up. But my son saw everything.
How old is he?
He's 10.
Okay.
He FaceTimed my wife, and she told him to punch me in the face. Punch me in the face, hit daddy, do whatever you can to wake him up. Do anything you can. Kick him, hit him in the face. And he said he didn't want to hit daddy in the face. He couldn't do it. He did put a towel over me because I was, you know.
Throwing up.
Uncovered.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because he said he didn't want any of the policemen or the ambulance to see me, you know.
Naked.
Naked. I was blue. They did tell me when I woke up in the hospital that I died for a few minutes, and I was unresponsive for 20 minutes. That alone was the hardest thing to hear, because I never actually heard the full story up until, I think, last week, actually, in family group. And so it hit me hard. And that, I mean, just knowing that my kids found me just changed the game for me, changed my whole outlook on this whole thing, and, like, it was rough. It still is rough, and I still need to make amends with my kids. I still haven't got there yet.
The story is still being written.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're still the producer and director of the story.
Right.
And somebody can ask your children in 20 years, tell me about your dad. Ask me about my dad. Ask me.
How's your dad?
He died at 47 of dopamine. Last thing he said to me is, I wish I could have gotten clean with you. So your kids in 20 years can say, my dad, he overdosed and we found him dead. Mm-hmm. Or they can say, my dad had issues. He fixed his life up, and what a great human being he is.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm going for. And that's what's going to happen.
The hell with alcohol and drugs, buddy.
Yeah.
Not you.
No. No.
The hell with them.
Yeah. I believe
you could figure out that alcohol and drugs are your enemy.
Yeah. I've been learning this program. I mean, I've been in 15 rehabs, and, like, it's funny. Not funny, but it's just ironic that I'm here for a reason. You know, I believe, you know, God has me here for a reason on this day, speaking, you know, through this microphone to, you know, share my message. And, like, if I, I've totally lost my train of thought, but I know I'm here for a reason. I know, I was going for that. Okay, so this program has taught me in the past 3 weeks that I've been here, like, than any other program I've been in. They are the most straightforward. They get down to the gritty of, like, what, you know, your like the root of your problem is, and just they give it to you like straightforward. And I've always had it sugar-coated my whole life through every single program, and thinking that, you know, I can stay clean by myself, and it never works. And, you know, something has been happening these past 3 weeks that I've been telling my mom, my wife, that I can't explain. Like, I believe my higher power is working in me so well in such a profound way that it's just, I'm so blessed to be here today and grateful.
Yeah, you're a lucky boy, because you should be dead.
I should be dead. Absolutely.
If your 10-year-old son didn't find you, you'd be dead.
Exactly. Yep. They could have been gone, and I could have been home alone.
Imagine, I'm not trying to make you feel guilty or bad, but imagine what your kid thought when he found you.
I can't even imagine. I don't know him.
He said, you owe him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You owe him your life.
Yep, I do.
You owe him sobriety.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think I'm so gung-ho now. It's just,
there ain't no drug worth more than your children, buddy, or your wife, or your father, or your mother, or your brother, or your sister, or your uncle, or your aunt, or your whatever.
Right, no.
Your dog, your cat.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't clear this up. So the reason why I overdosed was because the MDMA was cut with fentanyl.
Of course.
Which I had no idea. You know, I woke up in the hospital, and they said, you overdosed on fentanyl. I'm like, no, I didn't. I don't do fentanyl. They're like, well, your ecstasy had it in it. I'm like, what? Like, super surprised, because, you know, not even a thought in my head that I was getting fentanyl.
If you think about all the people that are dying out there on the streets, over 100,000 last year, probably 80,000 of them from fentanyl, 90% of them people did not buy fentanyl.
Yeah.
They bought a different drug and died from fentanyl. They were poisoned. They were lied to. They were murdered.
Yes.
Yep.
You were almost just one of those statistics. Yep. And the number is going to be a lot higher this year. So I'm really proud of you. You need to hear this. I'm really proud of you, and you know I care a lot about you.
I do know, absolutely.
And you better freaking stay clean.
I will.
I'll have the hit squad come out for you. Enough, got it?
I believe it.
Yeah, you need to now be to your children what you want them to be.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kerry.
You got it, dude. Give me a hug. Guess who's on? Introduce yourself. Tell everybody who you are, how old you are.
I'm Jillian Ruiz. I'm 22 years old. I'm an alcoholic addict. I am 53 days sober today.
Very cool. Yeah. I remember when you first came into rehab. You were like scared to death.
Yep, I was a little puffy.
I mean, scared, shy, like, this girl's going to hide in a corner. And
which I did.
I was, which you did for a minute. I was really worried about you, but you've done really good. What happened?
Well, I first started with nicotine in high school. Like the cool
kids.
That's
the first contract. That's what I keep saying.
I do actually remember the first time I did smoke pot. It was out of an apple, you know, like the cool kids do nowadays. Mm-hmm. it was right before school too. And I went into history class, and it was the best time of my life. And I continued using after that. Ever since then, and I haven't stopped since I got sober for the marijuana, and I started drinking.
I remember you asking me, "Do I got to stop pot too?" And when you were coming in, because you came in for alcohol, I said, "Duh." You should have seen her face. You were like, "Oh wow!"
I was like, "Wow, I see how it is." I started drinking the same time, probably around high school, but it didn't get crazy up until COVID hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
COVID was a game changer.
Mm-hmm. And also when I met my ex boyfriend, because he was over 21, and so we would always get drinks and everything. And it was really hard too, because I also got my first DUI when I was with him. We were hanging out, and he came a little tipsy, and I just got off of work, and I was just like, oh, since you're tipsy, let me get some too. And so we went to the gas station, got some drinks. We got into a verbal fight. I kicked him out of my car, and I sped off. I was going 80 miles per hour. My car hit the railroad tracks, did a 360. I literally felt my car do a 360. I hit four other cars, and a light pole went right through my car, 4 inches away from someone's apartment building.
You got super lucky you lived through that one.
Yeah, if anyone else was in my car, they would have died. The only seat that did not get smashed was my seat.
Somebody's watching over you.
Yeah.
And that was the first one.
That was the first one.
You would think that you might not have wanted to happen again, but.
But I did get a second one. That's when I went down the rabbit hole. My ex got arrested in September for domestic violence. I was in a domestic violence case for 2 years with him.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was really rough. 16 incidences. He broke my nose and dislocated my elbow. So that was not really good because he put me through hell. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
And basically, when he got arrested.
And you're worth so much freaking more than that. You know that.
I know. Okay. That was in September, and I got my second DUI this past December. Mm-hmm. And I was not in a good place at all. I was drinking a liter of vodka a day since I turned 21, which was about a year ago. And on top of that, more alcohol and smoking. And when that second DUI happened, I just got off of work. I chugged half a liter of vodka. And I told myself, because after work every day, I'd go on a drive and then I'd go home. I told myself that day, I'm not going to go on that drive. Somehow, I was like, nope, I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. I ended up going, and it rained previously that day, so the roads were a little slippy. And my car lost control, and it was a head-on-head collision with someone else. Mm-hmm. Both cars were totaled. I got arrested that night, too. They just held me for 10 hours to sober up, and then they let me go.
So now you have two drunk drivings and a court date, right?
Yes, my court date's coming up.
Okay. You hit a car head on. That's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And you all lived.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
The girls were pretty banged up, supposedly, but no, tragic injuries.
Did you? Okay. So then what happened? You woke up and you got sober and you said, what? Tell us about the jail experience and what changed, what made you come into rehab?
Well, when I woke up I really didn't even sleep in jail because I was having very bad withdrawals. And as soon as I got out, I went to work. I literally went from jail to work because I had to work. And I started drinking really bad after that. I didn't want to get help.
Well, by now you need to. Now you're trying to hide, numb, and run. Yeah.
And so I had my court date for my first DUI in January. And they try to push that one down because since I was a minor for the first one, they wanted to put it for reckless driving. So my public defender fought really hard, and I was at court for like 4 hours until he came back up to me, and he's like, they didn't accept it. And that's when I straight up told him right there, oh yeah, I know why they didn't do that. And he's like, why? And I was like, because I got a second DUI. And he was like, oh, okay. So he ran to the back, and he got me Gina White's number and told me that I needed to go to treatment.
Gina works for the courts, and yeah. She's a great woman, and she tries to help people that are in jail, mm-hmm. And she's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, she's a great, great lady. I love her. If it wasn't for her, I would not be sober. So,
if it wasn't for you, you wouldn't be sober.
Yeah.
Because Gina convinced you to call, and you called us, and you came in and checked into rehab. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gina, she led you there, but you did the work.
Yep.
And how much time sober you got?
53 days.
And what do you have to say to somebody out there that's drinking their problems away, so they think?
The alcohol is not going
to... You can hold on to that thought. We're okay. Going to go on break, and we're going to come back, and I want you to answer that question.
All right.
Okay. Welcome back to the Action Drug Rehab Hour. I'm Kerry Quash, and I am your host. And if you're just joining, you guys are my friends here are sharing experience, strength, and hope. And I'll tell you what, all three of them are very lucky to be alive, and that's for sure. I mean, quickly, what you just shared to us, you had
two DUIs.
And how bad were they?
Pretty bad. Head-on-head collision for the second one, a 360, going 80 miles per hour, hit the railroad tracks, my car did a 360 flip, hit four other cars, and a light pole straight through my car, 4 inches away from someone's apartment.
I think
building.
Maybe you were on a suicide run. Or maybe you just didn't care.
For the second one, I would say that. For the first, not.
Okay. But you do care now.
Yes.
What do you have to say to people listening?
Drugs and alcohol don't solve all the problems, coming from a person that dealt with a lot of trauma.
At 21 years old.
At 21 years old. And what? I'm glad that I can deal with all the problems that I have now sober instead of under the influence, because I can actually feel and deal with the situations I need to deal with.
And your name is?
Jillian Ruiz.
And?
I am an alcoholic addict.
And I'm worth it.
And I'm worth it.
Say it again.
I'm Jillian Ruiz. I'm an alcoholic addict, and I'm worth it.
You sure are. I'm really, really proud. Give her a hug for me, will you? I really am. I'm really proud of you. Anything you want to say to your family? I'm sure they're listening. I know they are, actually. speak to them directly.
Dad and Mom, I know you're listening, and I love you guys so much. You guys were the reason... Mostly the reason I needed to get sober, because I know I damaged a lot of relationships with you guys, but I do love you guys with all my heart, and I know that there's a lot of forgiveness that you guys need to forgive me for, and I am sorry that I put you guys through all that, and I love you just regardless, and I know my sister's probably watching too, so I love you, sis. You also mean the world to me. You helped me get through a lot of stuff, too. And I know you have my back no matter what.
And I hope the reason for you getting sober turns into because you love yourself.
Yep.
Because you're worth loving.
Yes.
What do you want to say to people listening? I know your parents, you told them you were on, right?
Yeah.
So I know they're listening. So talk to them. Talk to whoever you need to talk to.
Well, first for my mom and my dad, I love them. I love you, Mom and Dad. I'm going to do whatever it takes to gain your trust back. And I have some friends listening right now. I want to tell them that I'm doing everything in my power to gain your trust back and to... just make amends, to not burn any more bridges, because I'm messed up a lot of opportunities that because of using drugs and alcohol. So
I'm gonna say this. How do I say this without cussing? How about this? Screw drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, screw drugs and alcohol.
What?
Screw drugs and alcohol.
Not you.
Yeah.
But they, drugs and alcohol will turn good dreams into nightmares and make good people do bad things.
Yep.
The way you forgive yourself is by stop doing the things that make you feel bad about yourself.
Tired of being a criminal.
It's too late for calls, right?
It's too late. No. Does somebody want to call? She's got 3 minutes. If she wants to call, yes. We okay with that? So it's 661-298-5487.
Sorry, one more time.
661-298-5487. And we have 2 minutes, so this is going to have to be a really, really quick call.
Hopefully she can get it.
And I also got a message from Chris Kaufman that he knew Miranda. Yes, you did. She was a wonderful kid, and we're losing way too many wonderful kids right now.
Oh, she's calling my phone.
Huh?
Can I answer this?
Yeah, you can answer. Just put her on speaker.
Mama? Mama?
Hi.
Hi. We're live right now. I didn't know if you
We have 2 minutes, guys.
You want to call and say anything?
Do I want to call and say anything?
No. You're on the radio.
Do you want
to say something to your mom?
Yeah, Mom. Just want to say that I'm sorry. That what I put you through, and I just thank you for still being there and supporting me when you didn't have to, because I know it's hard.
Yeah. Well, I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of all the work you're putting in, and I just pray that this is it.
Yeah, me too. This is it, Mama.
Okay.
I love you.
I love you too. And I also, Carrie, without you, I don't know where we would be. I mean, I know this isn't, you know, about tooting your own horn, but honestly, Carrie, you've given your life to help these kids, and I thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give your kid a hug for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Give him a couple punches.
Yeah, that's coming. But on that note, I'm going to have to close the show until next week. You can keep talking to him, but until next week, this is the Action Drug Rehab Hour. And remember, there's always hope. Remember, nobody's smarter than the drug. Bye-bye.